colorway bikes, rough coloring wheels are produced.
Thanks. Well, I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me and asking me to give this talk. One of the organizers was much more instrumental than the others in making this talk possible, so I'd particularly like to thank Latsy for giving us a local lemma. I want to talk about applications of the Lovaas local lemma to graph coloring. I couldn't talk about all of them. You could write a book on that subject. So I'm just going to talk about a few. But I will list some of the people that have worked in the area here, although I won't be talking about work of all of them. So as I say, I won't survey. I can't hope to be comprehensive, so I want to get across a few simple messages. And the first simple message is that the local lemma was made to be applied to graph coloring problems. Now that's true in two senses. First of all, literally the first application of the local lemma was to a graph coloring problem. Okay. And secondly, the local lemma is a tool that allows us to derive global results by doing a local analysis. And many conjectures in graph coloring say that the chromatic number is actually determined by a local parameter. So it turns out that the local lemma allows us to get close to these conjectures when deterministic methods or other methods don't seem to have had any success. So I'll start off by reminding you what the local lemma is and what graph coloring is, and then I'll show you most of the details of a simple application and give you the flavor of some other more complicated applications. Okay. So the local lemma is really linearity of expectation and the subadditivity of probabilities locally. We know that if the suspected number of bad events is less than 1, then with positive probability the number of bad events is less than 1, so it has to be 0. What the local lemma said is that as long as the expected number of bad events in each neighborhood, and I'll say what that means in a moment, is less than 1/4, then with positive probability no bad event occurs, even if the expected number of bad events is huge. So what do we mean by a neighborhood? Well, we have our set of bad events. And for each bad event, if we define SA to be some other set of the events, the neighborhood, the condition we insist on is that A is mutually independent of all the events that aren't in its neighborhood. So it's mutually independent of the distant events. Whatever happens with the distant events isn't going to affect the probability of A occurring. Okay? And then we have the condition that in each neighborhood the probability, the sum of the expected number of bad events is less than 1/4. Then we can conclude that with positive probability none of these bad events occur. That may look like a sort of strange definition of a neighborhood, at least to any graph theorist. Let me give you, an example of the kind of situation where we use it, where this notion of neighborhood is much more obvious. So we can assume that our probability space is a product space, a bunch of coin flips, a bunch of dice rolls. Okay. And suppose each event only depends on some subset of outcomes. Okay. Then A will be mutually independent of all those events which don't intersect it, right? For which the component spaces on which the event depends are disjoint. Okay. So we've got a hypergraph here, an edge EA for each event A, and the neighborhood of A is just all the other edges that intersect it. Right? So really, this notion of neighborhood is pretty, pretty clear. And I think all the applications that I talk about, this will be the situation. Okay, so that's the local lemma. Now a few words about the graph coloring. Just, our audience seemed pretty diverse, just at least at the beginning of the week, so I thought I'd even define graph coloring. So we've got a graph, assign colors to the vertices so that adjacent vertices get different colors. Okay, so there's a 4 coloring, but of course the chromatic number of this graph is 3, because I could have put a 2 there. Okay. And so we're interested in determining the minimum number of colors we need to color the graph. And often, as I said, for many special kinds of graphs, this seems to be determined locally, and maybe it can be determined just by, or we can at least say something about the chromatic number just by looking at the neighborhood of each vertex. Okay? So, and specifically, of course, we have obvious trivial upper and lower bounds coming from the neighborhoods of the vertex. If we take a clique, every vertex has to get a different bound, so omega, the size of the largest clique, is a lower bound on the chromatic number. Okay. On the other hand, if we let delta be the maximum size of a neighborhood, then delta plus 1 is an upper bound, because we can just color greedily. If we got delta plus 1 colors, when we come to color a vertex, it's got a most delta-colored neighbor, so there's a color available for it. Okay. So these are two obvious upper and lower bounds, and one... the oldest theorems in graph coloring is that the only reason that, except for odd cycles, so if delta is bigger than 2, the only reason that delta plus 1 is tight is because there's actually a clique of size delta plus 1 in the graph. Okay. So what this says, if you like, then, is that for delta greater than 2, to determine if the chromatic number is delta plus 1, you just have to look locally. So you can do it efficiently. Just check if any neighborhood is a delta plus 1 clique. Okay. And we like to... there's lots of conjectures which say is close to omega or something like that. And we'd like to see if we can apply the local lemma to say something about these conjectures. Okay. Okay. So, in particular then, sort of the opposite situation to this extremal situation pointed out by Brooks' theorem would be if there are no cliques of size bigger than 2 in the graph. If the largest clique is an edge. Right. How close can chi be to delta plus 1 in that case? Okay. And it's known that... well, so my first application of the local lemma, I just want to show you that if there's no cliques of size 3 in the graph, then actually we can get a linear fraction away from delta plus 1. We can show that the chromatic number is less than 1 minus epsilon times delta plus 1. Okay? And the approach we take okay, is that we actually, instead of going right away for a coloring like that, we're going to get a partial coloring which we can complete greedily to the coloring we want. Okay? So we're going to try and get a partial coloring, and we're going to focus on the following variable. Okay. We want to know how many colors are repeated in the neighborhood of V. Okay. In this picture, there's two colors that are repeated in the partial coloring. One appears three times, and three appears twice. Okay. And what we want is we want that the set of these colors has at least epsilon, has size at least epsilon times delta plus one. Okay. And then we can complete the coloring greedily, because when we come to color a vertex, how many colors appear on its neighborhood? Well, there's only delta neighbors. Count here as well, that's delta plus one. And we know how many colors appear. Well, epsilon delta plus one colors appear twice. So at most, one minus epsilon times delta plus one appear. So there'll be a color with which to color them. Okay? So, by getting repeated colors, we can get down below delta plus one, and that's what we go for. Okay? So our analysis is trying to get that, and it's easy to see we can reduce this question to the delta regular case. And so just for simplicity, I'm going to talk about a graph where all the degrees are delta. Okay, not just the maximum degree. Okay? So now, like Benny, I want to end up talking about being lucky and clever, but unlike him, I start by talking about being lucky but not clever. Okay. So, So here's a process we're going to look at, the stupidest possible thing you could imagine doing. Just look at each vertex and assign it a random uniform color without thinking at all about what you're doing anywhere else. Right? You can't get any less clever than that. And then, of course, it won't be a coloring. So wherever you have two endpoints and an edge given the same color, you just delete the colors from those guys. The other guys retain their colors. Okay. So XV then becomes a random variable, right? And actually, it turns out that we're better off, for technical reasons, to look at the set of colors that not only do they repeat, but they never get deleted. So they're retained on, they're assigned to at least two vertices, and they're retained on all the vertices they're assigned to. Okay? That's obviously a smaller number. And what we want to show is there are at least that many repeats in each neighborhood. If we let EV be the event that there aren't that many repeats in V's neighborhood, we want to show that none of these bad events occur. Right? Yeah?
Sure.
Deleting the color from the vertices. Yeah.
Okay. But.
Okay. Sorry. That's a mistake. Then.
No, but
yeah.
Then, you are giving certain colors to the vertex, or just the color?
Just one color. So if I assign a 3 here to this guy and a 3 here to that guy, then that wouldn't be a proper coloring. So I have to delete those two colors. But all we want is a partial coloring that complete greedily. That was what we were looking for. Okay. So this is a set of bad events that we want to show hold. Okay. And how are we going to do that? We're going to use the local lemma. We're going to brown the probability that a bad event holds and then look at how big the neighborhoods in this the dependency. Okay. So first, to compute the probability that x prime v is this small, well, we proceed in two steps. We compute the expected value of x prime v, and then we show show that's high, and then we show that x prime v is concentrated around its expected value, so the probability it's this small is very small. Okay. I'll do the details just to show you that this really is quite a simple proof. Okay. Actually, I'll compute a lower bound on x prime v. I'll compute something where I want to look at colors that are assigned to exactly two neighbors of v and retained on both of them. Okay. So, because this is a triangle-free graph, every pair of neighbors xz of v is non-adjacent. So I got delta choose two choices for the two vertices that get this color. Okay. What's the probability they both get that color? It's 2 over delta squared. Okay. And what's the probability that color, they retain the color? Well, that means that none of their neighbors get that color. And the fact that this color was assigned to exactly two neighbors of V, that means none of the other neighbors of V get the color. Okay. So what we want to insist is that nobody else in the union of their neighborhood gets the color. And there's at most 3 delta vertices in that set. Okay. So you do the calculation. This is actually the probability, and a mistake. This is the probability of a particular color. Is in x double prime v, so the probability, the expected number of colors, we multiply by delta over 2. Okay, and that's just the power of v. Anyway, I really just put that computation up to show you that it's simple, and the point is you get that it's some constant times delta is the expectation. Okay. So now we want to prove that this variable is highly concentrated around its expected value. And one way of doing that, actually you can do that using martingales, using Azuma's inequality. But a way to do it which is more generally applicable is to use Talleyrand's inequality, or a corollary of one of the corollaries of Talleyrand's inequality that Colin McDermott talked about in his talk. Okay. And that says we're going to have a random variable defined in a product space such that changing one outcome, it's Lipschitz in that changing one outcome changes a variable by at most some constant C. Okay. And there's a short certificate, okay, in that if the value of the random variable is at least S, then we can certify this by looking at only RS of the component subspaces. Right. And then the X is highly concentrated around its expected value. Okay. So, in this situation, if we think about a couple of variables associated with this process, it's easy to see that the number of colors assigned on the neighborhood of V is concentrated within a range about root delta, because there's only delta choices, okay? And you don't even need Talleyrand. You can just use Hoeffding or something like that. It's just the root of the number of choices. Okay? But if you wanted to prove that using Talleyrand, well, how much can changing a color assignment change the number of colors assigned on the neighborhood by at most 1? If you want to show that there's 27 different colors on the neighborhood, how many vertices do you have to show the color of? 27. Right? So in this case, C would be 1 and R would also be 1. Okay? If you want to talk about how many colors are assigned on at least two vertices of the neighborhood, right? How much can changing a color assignment change that variable? Well, by two, it could change it for the first color and the second color. How many vertex assignments do you need to certify that you've got 27 such colors? 54. You need two vertex assignments for each color to show it appears twice on the neighborhood. Right? So, but more importantly now, suppose you were interested in, the variable we're interested in, right, is the number of colors assigned to at least two vertices of N by all of them. Okay? Well, the number of colors assigned to at least two vertices, that we can prove is concentrated. And now, we're going to prove concentration of the complementary set, which proves concentration of what we're really interested in. Okay? So if these two variables concentrated, then the original one is. We've already shown that this is concentrated. How about this one? Okay. Here, how many... Again, changing a color assignment can only change the variable by two because it only affects the two colors that we change to and from. What about the certificate? Well, for each color, we have to show at least two vertices in the neighborhood of a V that it's assigned to. Okay. To show that it's deleted, we have to show a neighbor of one of these two vertices which has the same color. We have to show the conflict that caused the deletion. So the certificate here is of size 3. Okay. And in particular, it's improving concentration here that we need Talleyrand, really. A zoom is not so simple to apply because we're not just looking at the color assignments in the neighborhood, we're also looking at the second neighborhood. And there's delta squared choices. So if we just prove concentration of square root the number of choices, that would be delta, which is the range we're looking in. Good enough. So this is why we need Talleyrand. Okay. It's because we look at the second neighborhood as well. Okay. So summing up then, we get that the expectation is high. We can use Talleyrand to prove that the probability we go down to, say, half of the expected value is exponentially small in delta. Okay. And now think about applying the local lemma. We know that the probability of a bad event is small, and now we want to know the probability of the sum of the bad events in the neighborhood. So we have to say, how big is the neighborhood here for the local lemma? Okay. And the point is that the event for a vertex only depends on the color assignments in the neighborhood and the second neighborhood. That tells us which colors are assigned and which colors are retained in the neighborhood. Okay. So unless the second neighborhoods of two vertices intersect, these two events are independent. Okay. So in other words, the hypergraph for an event XV is the second neighborhood of V. Right? In other words, we need to look at this set for a particular event EV. We look at the sentence itself and the event for any vertex joined to V by a path of length at most 4. Okay? Obviously, since maximum degree is delta, there's at most delta to the fourth such vertices. Okay? So the size of this set is at most delta to the fourth. So for large enough delta, right, the sum of the probabilities in the neighborhood is less than a quarter, which are the local lemma to say with positive probability no bad events apply. Okay? So that's one example of the use of this method. I'm going to show you some more complicated examples in less detail. And as Colin mentioned, in some of these more complicated examples, we actually use a strengthening of Talleyrand's inequality, where we think about permutations rather than a product space. And the condition here is that swapping two elements of a permutation only affects x by c. And in order to specify that x is at least s, we specify at least rs spots in the permutation. Not the complete permutation, just where this particular element goes. Okay? And you get the same corollary. Okay, so as I said, that was sort of the simplest possible... Oh, sorry, one more thing. Yeah, well, that's the simplest possible application of this technique. And the theorem that I told you there was already known, actually. But, in fact, you can say a bit more. You don't need that this graph be triangle-free. All you need is there is a linear number of non-edges in the neighborhood. Because that tells you the expectation of the number of repeated colors is some small constant times delta. And that was all you needed. It'll be a smaller... So you actually get, as long as there are a constant proportion of non-edges in each neighborhood, then chi of g is less than or equal to 1 minus delta times delta plus 1. And this result actually can be applied to solve a problem of Erdős and Nesztyétról. And there's no deterministic, or there's no other proof of this that I know of. So even the simplest application of technique can give you some interesting results. I want to try to talk about being clever as well as lucky now. Okay. So, the second simple message of this talk is there's no such thing as too much of a good thing. So if something works well once, why don't you just try and do it again and again and again? So rather than just coloring this triangle-free graph by applying the local lemma once and then finishing off greedily, let's apply the local lemma once, color a bit of it, apply it again, color some more, apply it a bit of it, color some more, and so on. Right? This is the semi-random method. Often we only color a very small proportion of the vertices in each iteration. Okay. And what do? We do the same thing that we've just done in each iteration. We look at what's going on locally, and we apply the local lemma to ensure that all of the neighborhoods behave like a random one during the iteration. Okay? If we just did a random iteration, we know that most of them do, but by applying the local lemma, we can say all the neighborhoods behave like a random one. And, of course, we'll need to define some parameters in order to be able to do that. Right? So, what do we mean by like a local one? And parameters that satisfy certain conditions. So Van mentioned that this is often called voidal nibble. That's because Vojta was one of the earliest people to use this technique. And I think the nibble comes from the fact that you only learn a little bit each time, so you're just taking a little bite. I'd like to suggest that you might all call... call this the Semiradi chomp, right? Because Endre was also one of the earliest people to look at this. And also, I mean, just as important here, I mean, you don't actually always take just a little bit. What's really important here is that you're getting everything at once. All the neighborhoods are behaving like a random neighborhood, right? So you really want to get everything. Okay. Okay, so we want to apply then this iterative method. And in doing that, it's convenient to talk about list coloring. So a list coloring problem, we have a list of acceptable colors at each vertex, and we just want a coloring with no conflicts where each vertex gets a color on its list. Okay? When we do the iteration, it's natural to throw the colored vertices away because we've already colored them. Just look at the uncolored vertices. But we don't want to color a vertex the same color as one of its neighbors we colored in the previous iteration. So we just have this list of colors which has not been used on a neighbor of V yet. Right? So by talking about a list coloring problem instead of a coloring problem, we can just forget about the colored vertices as we go on. Okay? And the next result I want to show you is that by doing this iteratively, we can color triangle-free grass with actually a little O of delta colors. Okay? So first of all, with no K3 and also no cycles of length 4. Okay? And just a little intuitive argument says that maybe delta over log delta colors is enough. Okay? Suppose the colors on the neighborhood of a vertex were independent. Suppose I just colored the vertices one by one, and I was giving them independent colors. Okay? Then, how could I get in trouble with V? Basically, I could get all the colors appear in his neighborhood. Okay? So, how many colors do I need to ensure that not all the colors appear in the neighborhood? Well, that's kind of the inverse of the coupon collector problem. Right? How long do I have to go to get all the colors? So as long as I have like delta over log delta, or a big constant times delta over log delta colors, I'll expect a lot of the colors not to have been never to be used in the neighborhood of V, so I'll have a color available for V. Okay. Now in that intuition, we're saying that the colors on the vertices look like random colors, which is maybe they don't, you know. But the triangle freeness and square freeness of the graph sort of means that they will. Right? The triangle freeness says that coloring one vertex in the neighborhood doesn't affect the list for any other vertex. Okay? And the square free name says coloring a vertex off the neighborhood can only affect one vertex in the neighborhood. Because if it affected the color in two vertices in the neighborhood, then we'd have a C4. Okay? So these two conditions together say, well, maybe the colors on the neighborhood will look like independently uniformly chosen random colors. And our intuition tells us if that were the case, we'd need like some constant times delta over log delta colors. Okay. So we're going to try to use that color, and then if we're doing this semi-random method, if we're only using little o of delta colors, we better only color little o of delta vertices in each iteration. Right? Because if we color all the vertices and we're losing little o of delta colors, for every vertex, the color it's got assigned will be assigned to lots of its neighbors. We expect about log delta. So we don't expect to color any vertices. So we're going to just activate some small proportion, little o of 1 over log delta proportion of the vertices. Okay, and then we're going to color them. And, well, what we'd like to do is to sort of... Whoops, don't read that last bit. We'd like to control the list sizes and the degree in the uncolored graph. Right? What we want to do is drive the degree... What we want to do is drive the degree down below the size of the list, and then we can just complete greedily. Okay? So we want to say, what's going on with these two parameters in an iteration? Well, the bad news is, okay, the bad news is that it goes the wrong way. Okay? Basically, you can think of that like this. I'm going to color K vertices in the neighborhood. They're all going to get different colors, okay, because that's why I avoid conflict. They're all going to get different colors. So I lose K colors, and I lose degree K. Okay? lesser than K. The degree was bigger than the list side, so losing K from the degree, right, is I'm not dropping as fast as losing K from the list size. So this is bad news. But what it means is that we weren't controlling enough parameters. Okay? Essentially what we've forgotten to do is make sure we get any repeated colors. Okay? Because we're saying, okay, the colors we use the first time, maybe they go from all the lists. We don't record whether or not they go from all the lists, so we may not never use them again. So what we want to do to make sure that we're going to get some repeated colors, is we're also going to keep track of the number of vertices in the neighborhood, which are still uncolored, and for which a particular color is. Okay? Because when we. Some of the vertices that remain uncolored, we won't be able to color them C anymore because they had a neighbor in the second neighborhood which got C. Okay? And the fact they aren't getting C anymore means you'll get colors which weren't available for V in the next iteration, quite likely. Well, I don't think I want to go into the details, but the point is that by controlling that third parameter, we can see what goes on with these three parameters, and we can guide the process so that eventually the list size goes up above the degree. Okay? Even though initially the degree is dropping more slowly, as the TVC value changes, then the degree starts to drop more quickly. Okay? Okay, but that approach now is actually so again, when we're doing this process, we define the expected value of these three parameters and show they're heavily concentrated around it, and then show with the local lemma that every vertex stays near where it should be. That approach is impossible if I've got a square. Right? It's impossible because when I give, say I had this graph where V and W have the same neighbors, if I give W the color 1, then I can't use 1 on any of those vertices anymore. Okay? So immediately TVC drops to 0. So TVC isn't concentrated. Okay? So I can't prove a concentration result because it's not true. Okay? So these aren't the right parameters to look at to do triangle free. Okay? In fact, you have to look more closely when you're doing triangle free. You look at an edge. Okay? And you say, because there's no triangle, when I look at an edge, the probability red appears in the neighbor of this guy is independent of the probability it appears in the neighbor of the other end. So you really have to focus on the edges. Okay? And let me start with skip to 4. You're going to control for each edge the probability you get a conflict there. Because if you never get conflicts, you finish the coloring. So you just control the probability you get conflict, and you keep that the same as the process goes on. Okay? But in order to be able to do that, you have to modify the probability of the color choices. You can no longer take uniform color choices. If W gets 1, you want V to be picking 1, because you know it's not going to appear on his neighbors. So you have to modify the color choices, and you've got to control this parameter, and it turns out another parameter that you need to control is what's happening with these probabilities. You don't want them to get too big, or you don't want, basically their entropy to get too big. If you don't keep control of what's happening as you change your probabilities, you won't be able to continue the process. But by bounding just these two parameters, you can show that you can continue the process and color triangle-free graphs also with delta over log delta colors, which is best possible up to a constant. Okay? So that's about halfway through my talk. So I'll have to think about what to do in the next 5 minutes. With that. Yeah, okay. In 5 minutes, is that? Yeah. Okay, thanks. So, Let me give you another example of this iterative procedure, and it's about total. A classic theorem tells us that we can delta plus one edge color the graph, so no incident edges get the same color. Okay, and there's a conjecture of Bézat and Vising that actually we can color both the edges and the vertices, so that we have a vertex delta plus one coloring. Sorry. Should be delta plus 2. So that we have a delta plus 2 vertex coloring, a delta plus 2 edge coloring, and no edge conflicts with an endpoint. Okay. And I want to tell you about a theorem that says actually we can do it not with delta plus 2, but with delta plus C, or some constant C. Okay. And the approach is quite simple. We're going to fix an edge coloring and then pick a random vertex coloring, at least a semi-random vertex coloring. And what we want is to not have too many conflicts between the edges and their endpoints. So we'll let reg for reject be the graph formed by the edges in conflict, and we'll just impose a degree condition on this reject graph. Okay? And by Vising's theorem, if its degree is C minus 2, we can recolor using C minus 1 new colors. So we rip out the edges in conflict, there's no conflicts anymore. Use C minus 1 new colors to put that back. Okay? So that's the approach. And so again, we just fix any arbitrary edge coloring, and now we're going to try and make a random vertex coloring to go with it. Okay? I'm not sure rejection is random, but let's think about random rejection. Okay? So I've got a fixed edge coloring around this vertex. How many edges incident to it do I expect to reject? So here, for example, I rejected 3 edges. I rejected 2 of them because they've conflicted with the other endpoint. I rejected because it conflicted with V. Well, let's forget about that third one. There can be at most one that conflicts with V. Right? There's only one edge with the same color as V incident to V. And let's just calculate the probability that I've got I of the other kind. Right? Well, pick those I edges. That's delta 2's I. The probability each one gets the same color is, well, there's delta plus 1 colors. It's a uniform choice. That's 1 over delta plus 1 to the I. So it's like 1 over I factorial. Okay? So, in particular, if I is like a constant times log delta, then, or even if I is log delta, then it's much smaller than a delta to any power, any other constant power. Okay? So we know what the random process looks like, and we like to get a semi-random process which does the same thing. Okay? So, if you think back to coloring sparse graphs, which was the first thing that we talked about, each time you sort of colored 1 over E of the vertices. So you can iteratively color in log delta iterations. Okay? And in each iteration, you can make sure that you're not doing too much worse than what the random process does. So you can make sure that the reject degree caused by an iteration at any particular vertex is the most log delta. You just apply the local lemma to the random analysis I just gave. Okay, so that would give us that we get delta plus log squared delta for these sparse graphs. Okay. But actually, what we'll do is we'll actually, if I get reject degrees for some big constant D at a vertex, I'll uncolor all the vertices which cause that reject degree to be big. Right? Remember, the probability this happened is like 1 over d factorial. Very small proportion of the vertices. Such a small proportion that it's irrelevant in comparison to what's going on by uncoloring just to avoid conflicts. Okay? So imposing that I only go up by a constant each iteration doesn't change the random iterative process at all. But I still got log delta iteration, so it's still order log delta that I'm doing. But actually, if you think about it a bit more, remember that. Remember that the list size, because I've got epsilon delta repeats, the list size always is at least epsilon delta, right? I've got delta plus one colors, delta plus one neighbors, epsilon. I've always got, but the degree is going down by a factor of e every time. So after just a constant number of iterations, the degree is way down below the list size. And now I can really avoid conflict. I don't expect any conflict. So by being a bit cleverer after this number of iterations, I can just make sure there's only order one conflicts occurring in the rest of the iterations. Okay? So that's the idea. And then the part that I didn't talk about is that you have to do some combinatorics and some structural decomposition in order to prove the same theorem for dense graphs. Okay, I'm sorry that I didn't get around to my stuff, but I hope you at least got a flavor for the area. Thanks.
What's the best form you have?
It's order delta over log delta. You want to know the constant?
Just for triangular free, nothing.
Yeah.
And do we have generalization of this for any KR free?
No, that's open. There's a, for KR free, you've got a log delta on the top.
But is this something smaller than linear?
Yeah.
Anything smaller than linear?
But maybe is that for coloring or just for the stable set?
Okay.
Over log delta, yeah. That's what I thought.
It's probabilistically little again.
Sorry?
It is probabilistic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so that's all the speakers on the section.